Welcome to Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat writer for the Bay Area News Group, and on today's show, I'm joined by Connor Letourneau from the San Francisco Chronicle to talk about our most confusing players on the Warriors this season.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm here with Connor Letourneau, a Warriors beat writer for the San Francisco Chronicle and a friend of mine. And I thought, Connor, you'd be as good as anybody to talk to because you and I cover this team so in depth on a daily basis. And it's our jobs to sort of make heads or tails of what this roster is going to be. And this roster, I don't know about you, but I find it very difficult to project what this group is going to be. We know what they want to be, right? They want to be a defensive team. They want to get out and run, all these things. But what are they going to look like? And you've got players like Wiggins and Oubre who are relatively new to the team, who've got, you know, some checkered pasts with as far as, you know, whether or not they're successful or not. Steph Curry is coming back. There's no Klay Thompson. James Wiseman's new. All these things. So I kind of wanted to just go into this and with a pretty simple question. Who are the most confusing players? Who are the players that confuse you the most on this roster? And I'd like to throw it to you first. Who is just that guy that you're just like, I don't know what to expect from this guy?
That's an interesting question because the word confusing is kind of subjective, right? Which I am guessing was part of the point in you asking that question. To be honest, there's several players, but the one I'm most curious about just in terms of what his role is going to look like is Jordan Poole. I wrote on him yesterday, and I know you've been on all the Zoom calls and seen how much praise he's gotten going back to mini camp, really throughout the offseason, just for his work ethic and how he's in the gym every day. And I'm always a little skeptical when I hear that kind of praise about a guy who hasn't really proven anything in the league. It's like, are they just kind of hyping him up? And look, it's great that he's in the gym every day, but that doesn't necessarily translate to like major on-court gains. But you know, you've seen a major improvement historically for guys who from their rookie to sophomore year. And I believe that he has gotten much better physically. He looks stronger and all those things, but where are the minutes? I mean, just looking at this roster, even with Klay out, there's not a ton of minutes that are obviously available for him. And people are talking about him like he could be, you know, a legitimate like sixth man, seventh man type guy. And are you really trying to give him minutes over Kent Bazemore and Brad Wanamaker? I personally think that I'd lean on those guys a little heavier, given that they're more proven and you know what you're going to get from them a little bit more. So I'm really curious just to see what his role is going to be and whether or not all this hype, is it going to actually translate into a sustained, meaningful rotation spot?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we're going to have to adjust our own thinking with is what is a rotation spot this season? Because the Warriors have already lost two players to the coronavirus in James Wiseman and Draymond Green. They haven't been able to participate in training camp so far. That's not going to just stop here, right? That's going to happen all year. I really do think that you're just going to have a player miss, you know, three or four games at a time because of a single positive test during the season. And so I think a normal rotation in a normal season goes eight or nine guys deep typically. I think this year it might stretch to the guy number 12, 13, number 14, you know, because there might be a game where Kent Bazemore is not available, where Brad Wanamaker or Damian Lee, they're just not available for whatever reason. Maybe it's the coronavirus or something else, and that's when Jordan Poole gets those minutes. I think early on we'll especially see him get some run. But I think that's a good answer for who's confusing, because it is one thing to put all this work in and develop, but do we really expect him to develop to the point where he's above those guys in a rotation, that he's earning some minutes above those guys? Or is it going to be more of just a spot play here and there based on an injury or an illness of some sort? So, I don't know. You know that I'm bullish on Jordan Poole, and I'm really excited to see what he's done. I think we'll know pretty soon whether or not all of this talk was just talk or if the hype was real.
Yeah, no, it's going to be really interesting. I'm personally not sold on Poole. I hope he proves me wrong, but people are talking about him like he's going to be this great NBA player. And to me, his ceiling is like an okay rotation guy. I don't think he's great at anything. You know, I don't.
Yeah,
I
agree. I would agree with you.
The skill that he can really hang his hat on is people talk about his 3-point shooting. He has yet to prove that. Even at Michigan, he wasn't that great of a 3-point shooter. I mean, he was drafted largely for his shooting. And I was like, looking at his numbers at Michigan, I'm like, this guy was not shooting 40% from three. You know, it'll be interesting. Another guy who I'm very intrigued by is Kevon Looney. Obviously he dealt with the injuries last season and was a shell of himself, dealt with some pretty serious health problems and then had surgery in May to repair a core muscle issue that apparently was very helpful. And he's all the reports are is that he's looking like the Kevon of old. Now with James Wiseman out indefinitely because of the positive coronavirus test, you got to wonder, is Kevon going to be your starting center on Saturday in this preseason opener? Could he go into the season opener as your starting center? Would you feel comfortable with that? There's a lot of questions that I'd like to see answered about him.
But it's not confusing, right? Like, we know exactly what it is that we're dealing with when it comes to Kevon Looney. If he's healthy, he's the anchor of your defense. I think the anchor of your second unit defense. I would still pencil in Marquise Chris as the starter. That's who I'm still leaning toward. Especially now that Wiseman's missing most of training camp. But they're going to need somebody to anchor that second unit defense, especially when Draymond Green is off the floor. And I think that'll be Kevon. And that's kind of it. And if he's healthy, that's what he'll play his 20 minutes a game or whatever it is. And that's Kevon Looney. And if he's not healthy, he won't play. And they're going to have to rely on a little bit more small ball stuff with Draymond or maybe even Pascal at center. But you know, the lion's share of minutes going to Marquise Chris and James Wiseman, that's it. But I'm really, one of the guys who's confusing me a lot is Kent Bazemore. And there's been a lot of talk about,
Anti-Kent Bazemore, by the way. I've already noticed in your mailbags.
Oh, because I said, is he really that much better than Damian Lee?
Yeah, which I think is a somewhat controversial opinion. I think a lot of people are kind of down on Damian Lee.
A lot of people are down on Damian Lee and really high on Kent Bazemore, but I mean, he was there for the minimum, and I'm not saying it was there for a reason. And I think he might have worked out something with Steph Curry where, hey, like, I want to get back to Golden State. And so he kept talking about how happy he was to get back to the Bay. So I'm not reporting this. I'm speculating that the Warriors were probably a target of Kent Bazemore's all along. And so I think it's a really good signing. Kent Bazemore at the minimum is, I think, one of the better sneaky deals of the offseason because he's much better than a minimum player. I don't know that he's a bona fide sixth or seventh man. And I think people are reading into those 25 games in Sacramento like there's some that they're more representative of what he is than the last 7 years of his career, which he's always been fine, but I don't think he's obvious. I don't think he's the savior of this bench either. And so maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I don't know what to make of those 25 games because he got an opportunity, like he's going to get an opportunity in Golden State. And so maybe that is more representative of what he can contribute to the Warriors. But and that's the part to me that confuses me is he really the savior of this bench unit? Is he really this like valuable depth piece, or is he going to just end up being kind of another guy like a Damian Lee or a Glenn Robinson or something like that? Kind of the guys that they went through last year.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about, is he the Kent Bazemore from Sacramento when he finished the season and played pretty well in 25 games for Sacramento? Or is he the Kent Bazemore from earlier in the season with Portland where he was awful. Like, yeah. Offensively, he was awful. I'm from Portland. My dad's a diehard Blazers fan. When the Warriors signed Kent Bazemore, he texted me and he said, Kent Bazemore sucks. and my dad doesn't talk like that very often. So no. He was feeling some type of way about Kent Bazemore. And I think all of Portland fans felt that way about Kent Bazemore because – you know, he came in off of that stint with Atlanta where he got the big contract and, you know, was considered a really, really solid 3-and-D guy for good Atlanta teams. And then, you know, I felt like his skills kind of diminished a little bit toward the end of his stint there. And then he arrives in Portland with the hope that he can be a real difference maker, and he hurt them. especially offensively. And I think he let that bleed into his defense a little bit too. But then it was like a Jekyll and Hyde of a season, right? Because then Sacramento, he goes in and he looks like the Kent Bazemore of old. He looks like the Kent Bazemore from Atlanta.
He looked better than that Kent Bazemore. I mean, that was the best. Like, those 25 games, he's never been better.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that was his most recent showing, right? So if he can just build off that with the Warriors, then that's a phenomenal signing on a minimum contract. I think that the Warriors like him because they feel like they know what they're going to get from him. He's helpful defensively. He can guard the best wing scorer if you need him to. And, you know, it doesn't hurt that he's close friends with Steph and has a history with the franchise, and the Warriors know what he's like personally. So I thought it was a good signing. Now, is he better than Damian Lee? That's a good question. I mean, he's Damian Lee. I think I don't think people take Damian Lee seriously yet because he had his breakthrough in throwaway games that didn't matter. So it's like, okay, you put up some numbers in these games where no one was on the court and no one else was going to score. Can you actually do that with Steph on the floor and with, you know, in games that matter?
I think they're very similar players. Bazemore is probably a hair better defensively, but I trust Damian Lee's long-range shooting to be more consistent than Bazemore's at this point. And so I think, and they play the same position, shooting guard who in a pinch can play some small forward for you. 6'4", 6'5"-ish, about the same weight, like the same strength, like they can guard the same positions. I don't know that we should just be penciling in Kent Bazemore in the ahead of Damian Lee in this rotation. I think at first that's going to be what the case is, but if Damian Lee proves that he's, and by the way, Damian Lee is younger, right, than Kent Bazemore, that matters too. He may have a higher ceiling at this point than Bazemore is at, and so maybe by the end of the year it's Damian Lee who is playing more minutes than Kent Bazemore. I don't think that that's out of the question. I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to consider.
And not to like name every guy on the roster here, but Damian Lee is another guy who's confusing, right? I mean, I wrote about him the other day, and you know, this is a guy who people don't realize his contract's not guaranteed this year. It's only partially guaranteed this year. If he, for some reason, was just not helpful at all, the Warriors could cut him before February 27th and not be out any more than that $600,000 that he's guaranteed. You know, and given some of the other guys they have in that wing rotation, maybe that could happen. I mean, I'm not expecting that to happen, but he is under a little bit of pressure to build off last season and show that he can be a legitimate rotation player for a playoff bound team. I'm still not confident that I'd feel comfortable playing Damian Lee meaningful minutes in the playoffs. He needs to show Steve Kerr that he warrants that type of privilege.
Yeah, guys like Damian Lee and Bazemore are obviously best suited to play next to superstar type of specialists because they're not specialists, right? And I think when you mentioned Jordan Poole, he kind of fits the similar mold where Jordan Poole maybe project like his upside is this, not right now there's definitely weaknesses in his game, but with Damian Lee and Kent Bazemore, you can't really point to any one weakness in their game. So you could play them at the two, they can soak up minutes, they could absorb minutes, right? And if you're, you know, an opposing player, you're not going to attack them and pick and roll over and over again. They're not that weak of defenders, and they're going to, you can trust them enough to at least make the, you can trust them to make an open shot. They can attack closeouts. They can do some stuff. So they're not going to take anything off the table for you, but they're not going to win you a playoff game either, right? And so you feel safe if you're Steve Kerr plugging them in, understanding that, hey, they're not going to screw things up dramatically and cost us, you know, a big possession or something like that. But at the same time, you know, in the playoffs, you want your best players on the floor. And I don't know where Bazemore and Lee rank as far as that is concerned. Talking about some of the best players who are going to be on the floor in those moments, Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins. I was really encouraged by what I saw from Wiggins in those 12 games. And I've always been a big Kelly Oubre guy. But I really – these guys are very confusing because maybe it would have been less so had Klay Thompson been healthy. But now that Klay is out – it's one of those guys who need to step up as the Warriors' number two option on offense. I have no idea which one it's going to be. You could argue that it would be Andrew Wiggins because of his experience being a number one option in Minnesota, because he's worked on his ball handling. He's a better ball handler than Oubre. I don't even think it's a competition. You know, he has the ability to score points in volume, but so does Oubre. He's got a great, and he's got a scoring mentality. He's a little bit more cutthroat and a little bit more of that killer instinct that Wiggins doesn't really have. And I kind of like a little, I think he's got a few more moves offensively than Andrew Wiggins does. I don't know. I really can't. I don't know who, if it was going to be just pure skill set, I think it would be Wiggins. But if it would be mentality, I think it would be Oubre who steps up as the number two scorer. What do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. for one thing, Oubre is a better shooter than Wiggins is.
Is he?
He's a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing with Oubre. I mean, he shot 35% last year as a career high. Is that an anomaly? Or is that a trend? We have no idea. And that's part of the other confusing thing with them. If Oubre and Wiggins kind of go back down to 33-ish%, 32%, it's going to completely crush the Warriors' half-court offense. They will have no chance scoring on a possession-to-possession basis in the half-court.
Yeah. No, the thing that I'm curious is just how does Steve Kerr maximize their strengths without letting their strengths infringe on each other's? Because they're very similar players. They're kind of the same player, actually, in a lot of ways. And I'm not just talking about basketball. I'm talking about they're one and done's at Kansas, highly touted players who were one and done's at Kansas, who I think have dealt with a lot of criticism in their careers. I think a lot of people feel like they haven't really lived up to their physical abilities. I think they have chips on their shoulder. Oubre said that they're both introverts, even though Oubre on the court is much more fiery than Wiggins is. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's just a lot of parallels there. And sometimes when you're talking about a basketball team, sometimes when you have players with the same skill sets, that can be a bad thing. You know, because it's harder to differentiate and figure out how to showcase them. So that'll be an interesting thing for Steve to figure out.
Yeah, I can already see there maybe being a little bit of a push and pull with those two guys. Who is it? Who do you go to in that second unit? Steve Kerr's trying to figure this out. And he mentioned maybe it's Wiggins and Oubre who lead the second unit. Maybe it's just one of them. There might be a little bit of a push and pull. And when I think it gets to that, I kind of feel like Wiggins, and look, I don't want to end up, you know, making the same assumptions that everybody has made about Andrew Wiggins throughout Andrew Wiggins' career, but I do feel like Wiggins might be more content sliding into a supporting role than Kelly Oubre would be. But we'll see. I don't know. That's going to be a really interesting dynamic to see play out. One last player that I want to bring up before we get out of here. Are you confused, by the way, before I get to that last player? Are you confused at all by Draymond Green? Are you just – I think a lot of people are just saying, hey, last year he wasn't playing for anything. He needs to be motivated. This year he's going to be healthy. He's going to be motivated, and he's going to be back to the same old Draymond Green. But are you concerned at all that it's been – basically he's 2 years older than the last time we saw peak Draymond Green?
Yes. I don't think it's as much of a guarantee that he's going to just suddenly be the Draymond of old, as a lot of people assume. You know, this is a guy who historically has needed great players around him. And I think he's really benefited from the spacing that Steph and Klay provide. And I think not having Klay, obviously it'll help to have Steph out there, but not having Klay, I think, is really going to affect Draymond. Also defensively, he's going to have to shoulder even more of a load without Klay out there. And I'm honestly not convinced that he's physically 100%. I mean, he hasn't been physically 100% for a couple of years now. He turned it on in the playoffs 2 years ago, but did not look good in the regular season that year. Last year, obviously, was his worst year since maybe his rookie or first couple of years in the league. I know the narrative with Draymond. It's Draymond's listening to all the criticism, and he's you know, feasting on all that. But I also think he's had a lot going on in his life. And, you know, he just had a new, you know, a baby. He had to postpone his wedding. You know, he's had a lot going on in his life. I'm not saying that he's not putting the work in, but you know, I'm not convinced that he's going to come in here fresh off a positive coronavirus test and be this dominant force that he used to be. I hope he proves me wrong.
Yeah, and I think he is planning to do that, but I'm with you. I don't know what his body is going to be capable of. And if he is playing 30 to 32 minutes per game, you know, when he's on the floor, is he going to crush that space? And I think you make a really good point that when Steph and Clay were on the floor, it doesn't really matter what Draymond Green does. But now, you know, it could get really ugly really quick, but for the same reasons I was talking about Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins. If it's just Steph Curry spacing the floor, I don't know how many non-floor spacers you can play with Steph, right, before this thing just completely grinds to a halt. I think Draymond's going to thrive in the open floor. He's a quick decision maker. I think he's going to be playing point guard for the, you know, whatever, not nominally, but he's going to be running a lot of offense with Steph Curry kind of playing off the ball and then Oubre and Wiggins slashing. But it's going to be interesting to see how that looks. And if that's going to be what you ask Draymond Green to do, then he better be playing the best basketball he's played in 2 or 3 years, right? And maybe in 4 years, if you consider just regular season basketball. Like that, Draymond Green prided himself on being a 16-game player, right? Well, the Warriors need him to be more than a 16-game player right now. They need him to be a 72-game player. And I don't know if he still has that in them because he was showing signs of not having that in him 2 or 3 years ago. And right. So I think that's a huge question with Draymond Green. I'm not really confused by this player, but I feel like we need to bring him up. James Wiseman hasn't been in training camp, so I think the Warriors might be more confused than anybody. The whole point of training camp for James Wiseman was going to be this John Tafford-like stress test for Wiseman. They didn't get to do it. They wanted to see what he can do. Okay, you talk, you know, about months being able to switch onto guards and you're shooting threes. Let's see it in a 5-on-5 scrimmage. They haven't gotten that opportunity yet. To me, I guess what interests me here is how much rope do they give him early? How much playing time do they give him early now that he's missed some of this training camp? And how much are they willing to experiment with Wiseman early just in the name of saying, like, all right, we got to really figure out what we have in this guy versus the immediacy of needing to win games so you can get to the playoffs.
Yeah, first of all, that was such a tough blow for him personally. If anyone needed this training camp, it's James Wiseman, right? He's a guy who not only is a rookie, potentially going to be playing major minutes for you, but he has not played a competitive game in over a year. Last time he played was in November of 2019 for Memphis before the NCAA sanctions came down. So, I think the Warriors are just kind of trying to temper expectations as much as possible because they know that for someone like this, it's going to be hard to teach him on the fly, especially once you get into the season. You know, there's not a lot of practices. You know, it's one thing to watch film and, kind of try to follow along with what's going on. But unless you're actually out there, you really can't be making the type of strides that you want to be making. So really tough. I don't really tough for them. I don't think Draymond being out is that big a deal, but Wiseman, that is a big deal. And the thing is, what could happen here is if this ends up bleeding into the regular season, this might affect the entire outlook of his entire rookie season, you know, because you're in a situation where someone technically beats him out for the starting job. Maybe Marquise Chris or Kevon does well in that role. Then you have kind of Wiseman entrenched coming off the bench. And if he's struggling in more limited minutes, he might get down on himself. You know, this is a guy who historically has been very hard on himself, has been very sensitive. That's not a bad thing, but he did have a really hard time with NCAA suspension I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he could mentally let this get away from him if he does struggle early on. So it'll be fascinating to see how that all unfolds.
It will be, and we will see how it all unfolds. Connor, I'll be talking to you a lot throughout the season. Thanks for jumping on the podcast, man.
Of course, man. Thank you.
Thanks again to Connor Letourneau for joining the show. You can read his work over at the San Francisco Chronicle. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors wherever you listen to podcasts. Please rate, review, and say nice things about the show. You can send your comments and questions to me on Twitter at WC Goldberg or email them to me at wgoldberg@bayareanewsgroup.com. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and I'll see you here tomorrow morning.